तिमिरन्यस्याज्ञनञ्जना शलाकाया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासुदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Srila Prabhupada, Srila Guru Maharaj, Srila Gurudev, Srila Acharya Dev ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaura Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atmanam Chanusochami Pavantam Charo Chamarautamam Devam Pitrin Rishidin Sadun Sarvan Varnams Tatasramam I am thinking about myself and also, O best among the demigods, about you, as well as about all the demigods, sages, denizens of Pitcherlok, devotees of the Lord, and all men obedient to the system of varna and ashram in human society. I think this is Dharma speaking, huh? He's speaking to Bhumi, Mother Earth. Yes. Then, purport, to effect the perfection of human life, there is cooperation between men and demigods, sages, denizens of Pitcherlok, devotees of the Lord, and the scientific system of varna and ashram orders of life. The distinction between human life and animal life, therefore, begins with the scientific system of varna and ashram, guided by experience of the sages in relation with the demigods, gradually rising to the summit of reestablishing our eternal relation with the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. When God made Varnashram Dharma, which is strictly meant for developing animal consciousness into human consciousness, and human consciousness into godly consciousness, is broken by advancement of foolishness, the whole system of peaceful and progressive life is at once disturbed. In the age of Kali, the first attack of the venomous snake strikes against the God-made Varnashram Dharma. And thus a person properly qualified as a Brahman is called a Sudra, and a Sudra by qualification is passing as a Brahman, all on the false birthright claim. To become a Brahman by birthright claim is not at all bona fide, although it may be a fulfillment of one of the conditions. But the real qualification of a Brahman is to control the mind and the senses, and to cultivate tolerance, simplicity, cleanliness, knowledge, truthfulness, devotion, and faith in the Vedic wisdom. In the present age, consideration of the necessary qualification is being neglected, and the false birthright claim is being supported, even by a popular sophisticated poet, the author of Ramcharitamanasa. This is all due to the influence of the age of Kali. Thus, Mother Earth, represented as a cow, was lamenting the regrettable condition. Now, I'm not sure the name of that person who is the poet of the Ramcharitamanasa. Does anyone know?
Maharaj, I know of Tulsidas and Valmiki ji. I know of those two who wrote the two two separate Ramcharitmanas that I know.
Is that, no, that's not a, no, he's not speaking of Ramayana. Okay. I think this is a poem. Oh, I am just looking it up. Here's something by Tulsidas and another one, Vishwanath Prasad Mishra. Perhaps that's the person he's thinking of, Vishwanath. Anyhow, not sure. Next verse is Pramadyo Bahutitam Pramadyo Bahutitam Hyarapanga Moksha Kamastapa Samacharana Bhagavad Prapanaha Sasri Svavasham Aravinda Vanam Vihaya Yat Para Sobagam Malamba Bhajate Bhajate Nurakta Tasyaham abhya kuli sankushu ketukaitahe Srimad padaira bhagavataha samalankritangi trin atyarocha upalabhya toto vibhutim lokansa mama vyasvijar utsmayatim tarante. Lakshmi Ji, the goddess of fortune, whose glance of grace was sought by demigods like Brahma, and for whom they surrendered many a day unto the personality of Godhead, gave up her own abode in the forest of lotus flowers and engaged herself in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. I was endowed with specific powers to supersede the fortune of all the three planetary systems by being decorated with the impression of the flag, thunderbolt, elephant driving rod, and lotus flower, which are signs of the lotus feet of the Lord. But at the end, I was so fortunate, the Lord left me. Purport: the beauty and opulence of the world can be enhanced by the grace of the Lord, and not by any man-made planning. When Lord Sri Krishna was present on this earth, the impressions of the special signs of his lotus feet were stamped on the dust. And as a result of this specific grace, the whole earth was made as perfect as possible. In other words, the rivers, the seas, the forests, the hills, and the mines, which are the supplying agents for the necessities of men and animals, were fully discharging their respective duties. Therefore, the riches of the world surpass all the riches of all other planets in the three planetary systems of the universe. One therefore asks that the grace of the Lord always be present on earth, so that we may be favored with his causeless mercy and be happy, having all necessities of life. One may ask how we can detain the Supreme Lord on this earth after his mission is fulfilled and he has left this earth for his own abode. The answer is that there is no need to detain the Lord. The Lord, being omnipresent, can be present with us if we want him at all. By his omnipresence, he can always be with us if we are attached to his devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. There is nothing in the world with which the Lord is disconnected. The only thing we must learn is to excavate the source of connection and thus be linked with him by offenseless service. We can be connected with him by the transcendental sound representation of the Lord. The holy name of the Lord and the Lord himself are identical, and one who chants the holy name of the Lord in an offenseless manner can at once realize that the Lord is present before him. Even by vibration of radio sound, we can partially realize sound relativity, and by resounding the sound of transcendence, we can verily feel the presence of the Lord. In this age, when everything is polluted by the contamination of Kali, it is instructed in the scriptures and preached by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, we can at once be free from contamination and gradually rise to the status of transcendence and go back to Godhead. The offenseless chanter of the holy name of the Lord is as auspicious as the Lord himself, and the movement of pure devotees of the Lord all over the world can at once change the troublesome face of the world. Only by the propagation of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord can we be immune from all the effects of the age of Kali. Jai. Ayo vai mamati baram asuravangsarancham ragyam asohini satam apanudad atmatantraha tvam dushtam unapadam atmani purushena sampadhyana yadushu ramyam abhirarangam. O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you are also in a distressed condition, weakened in your standing strength, and thus he also incarnated by his internal energy and the family of the Yadus to relieve you. Purport. The Asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification, even at the cost of others' happiness. In order to fulfill this ambition, the Asuras, especially atheistic kings or state executive heads, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons to bring about a war in a peaceful society. They have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement, and thus Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. By increase of the Asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. In such a situation, the personality of Godhead incarnates to vanquish the unwanted Asuras and to reestablish the true principles of religion. This was the mission of Lord Sri Krishna, and he fulfilled it. Kava Saheta Viraham Purushottamasya Premavavaloka Ruchirasmiti Valguljalpai Stairam Samanam Arahan Madumani Nanam Ramotsavo Mamaya Rangri Vitankiyatayaha. Who therefore can tolerate the pangs of separation from that Supreme Personality of Godhead? He could conquer the gravity and passionate wrath of his sweethearts, like Satyabrahma, by his sweet smile of love, pleasing glance and hearty appeals. When he traversed the earth's surface, I would be immersed in the dust of his lotus feet, and thus would be sumptuously covered with grass, which appeared like hair standing on me out of pleasure. Purport. There were chances of preparation between the Lord and his thousands of queens because of the Lord being absent from home. But as far as his connection with earth was concerned, the Lord would traverse the earth with his lotus feet, and therefore there was no chance of separation. When the Lord left the surface of the earth to return to his spiritual abode, the earth's feelings of separation were therefore more acute. Tayarevam katayataho prithvi dharmayostada parikshina namarajarshihi praptaha pachim sarasvatim. While the earth and the personality of religion were thus engaged in conversation, the saintly king Parikshit reached the shore of the Saraswati River, which flowed toward the east. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. chapter 17, excuse me, Punishment and Reward of Kali. Suto vacha tatra go mitunam raja ayamanam atavata anatavat nanda hastam cha vishalam adadrishe ripalanshanam. Suto Goswami said, after reaching that place, Maharaj Pariksit observed that a lower caste Sudra dressed like a king was beating a cow and a bull with a club as if they had no owner. Report. The principal sign of the age of Kali is that lower caste Sudras, that is, men without Brahminical culture and spiritual initiation, will be dressed like administrators or kings, and the principal business of such non-kshatriya rulers will be to kill innocent animals, especially the cows and the bulls, who shall be unprotected by their masters, the bona fide vaishyas, the mercantile community. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the vaishyas are meant to deal in agriculture, cow protection, and trade. In the age of Kali, the degraded vaishyas, the mercantile men, are engaged in supplying cows to slaughterhouses. The kshatriyas are meant to protect the citizens of the state, whereas the vaishyas are meant to protect the cows and bulls and utilize them to produce grains and milk. The cow is meant to deliver milk, and the bull is meant to produce grains. But in the age of Kali, the Sudra class of men are in the post of administrators, and the cows and bulls, or the mothers and fathers, unprotected by the vaishyas, are subjected to slaughterhouses organized by the Sudra administrators. The bulls have been replaced with tractors, and cows that they can't replace. Cows can only deliver milk. Milk can't come any other way. Of course, you can get milk. Goats and other animals, buffalo. Even in India, buffalo milk is there, quite prevalent. And now they have other ways of getting milk also. From the soy, they have soy milk. From almonds, they have almond milk, like that. Different milk substitutes. Anyhow, cows and bulls, male and female of that species, the bovine species, pretty much utilized for their meat, money making from the meat, flesh. Their nobility as a class of living creatures is no longer held in high regard. Cows and the bulls have a very special mentality. Generally, the mode of goodness, they are considered in the mode of goodness. And because people have no sense of that particular quality, the subtle quality, the personal or the conscious quality of things, they treat them as sources of income from a purely gross platform of evaluation. So that's the symptom of the Kali Yuga. Men are simply bag of molecules of chemicals. And the unborn child can be discarded at will because it is an unnecessary imposition on the mother, who is only interested in enjoying sex life, or has a material job, making money as a career, And the whole idea of childbearing is simply a burden for them. Childbearing and child rearing, simply a burden to such persons. But because they want to enjoy their sexuality, they, if that some unfortunate for them situation arises in which pregnancy comes, and they simply dispense of that, dispose of that. And like this, the very mundane conception of life, a very gross mundane conception of life, takes precedence over the higher, more noble sentiments of what all these things might mean from a more conscious and personal level of perception. It all sunk into the lower conception, unconscious world. This is a symptom of the Kali Yuga. Vrisham Mrinala Davalam Mehatam Evil Bibhyatam Vibhyamanam Padaikena Siddhantam Sujataritam. The bull was as white as a white lotus flower. He was terrified of the Sudra who was beating him, and he was so afraid that he was standing on one leg, trembling and urinating. Purport. The next symptom of the age of Kali is that principles of religion, which are all spotlessly white like the white lotus flower, will be attacked by the uncultured Sudra population of the age. They may be descendants of Brahman or Kshatriya forefathers, but in the age of Kali, for want of sufficient education and culture of Vedic wisdom, such Sudra-like population will defy the principles of religion, and persons who are religiously endowed will be terrified by such men. They will declare themselves as adherents of no religious principles, and many isms and cults will spring up in Kali Yuga, only to kill the spotless bull of religion. The state will be declared to be secular, or without any particular principle of religion, and as a result, there will be total indifference to the principles of religion. The citizens will be free to act as they like, without respect for sadhu, shastra, and guru. The bull standing on one leg indicates that the principles of religion are gradually diminishing. Even the fragmental existence of religious principles will be embarrassed by so many obstacles, if it is as if in the trembling condition of falling down at any time. This is a very nice realization here being presented. How the state will be declared to be secular. We can see how that's happening in America especially. It was founded by religious people, actually, this in America, United States. It was settled by the pilgrims who came to escape religious persecution and to establish the free practice of the religion in a place where they would not be restricted by any barriers, traditional barriers. In Europe, there was religion, but there was also feudal feudal means where there are lords and who are under the lords, those who are lording it over and those who are under them. And also even the church or the other religious traditions there in Europe, they were very restrictive of the people's freedom to establish their own relationship, how they wanted with God. Everyone had to follow one particular way, or they were dealt with very severely. In Vedic society, that's not the case. According to your mentality, you can worship. According to Varnashram Dharma, demigod worship, all those things were there. Everyone was accommodated. And the principles of religion, they were in some sectarian matter. Austerity, mercifulness, cleanliness, tolerance, truthfulness, rather. These four principles are not particularly for Christianity or Hinduism or Buddhism or Kali worship or this worship or that worship. These are general principles of religion. Anyone can follow that who has any sense of any higher existence. They can understand the benefits of austerity or cleanliness, truthfulness, and mercifulness. In that sense, if a state becomes responsible for propagating such principles of religion, then it doesn't violate any religion. The ability of any religion to practice according to its free expression of the heart. But it does prevent some kind of degradation of a society. So that a state is secular does not mean that it should be not interested in the higher purposes of religion. It is essential, rather, that those things are understood and practiced. Vaishnavism is actually not the right term for Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is a universal conception, eternal duty, not a sectarian concept. Our idea of the perfect religion is given in Bhagavatam also, Safai, from Samparo Dharma. Yata Bhaktir Rokshaje. That means what we practice is not a religion per se, that this as to be called this religion or that religion. But what we practice is, and it when I can practice as the purpose of developing the highest love, devotion to the Adhoksaja, that which is not within our ordinary perception. Why we should only worship that is within our own perception. This is an arrogant attitude toward reality. What I see, what I know, what I can feel, touch, and so forth, I will only give account for that in my life. Other things I will not believe in, I won't give any credence to, that there's anything else beyond what I can experience. What I have experienced in my life, what mankind has experienced throughout their whole existence, only those things will allow. To be real is a kind of pride, foolishness, foolish pride, that there is nothing else beyond what I experience and know. There is nothing else. Only what I've experienced and what I know, that's all there is. Nothing else exists. As if I could experience and know everything that there is to know. There is always, for the properly balanced person, he always recognizes that there are a certain amount that he knows, and then the rest is unknown. Not that everything he knows, that's it. There's nothing else. He can recognize. I know a certain amount, yes. I have a certain experience, yes. But beyond that also, there are other things that I don't know, that I haven't experienced, maybe. Why I should neglect that, and why I should not give that Equal importance and even greater importance to what I do know. So like that, religion is trying to teach us Adhoksaja, that worship or devotion to the Adhoksaja platform. Not only what we know, but what we don't know, what is beyond our knowing. Adhoksaja. Adhoksaja means between A and Z. Adhok. In Sanskrit, A and Hok. These are the first and last letters of the Sanskrit alphabet. Adhoksa. Whatever is known within our vocabulary, the meaning is whatever is known within our vocabulary, whatever we have given names to are things that we know. Whatever we talk about, those are things we know. But beyond that, there is also something. Adhoksaja. What takes... Ja. Aja means who has taken birth beyond the known alphabet, known vocabulary of man. What exists beyond that? How to develop devotion for that? Some respect for that. It is Adhoksaja. And that is religion. Now, is that a sectarian idea? Does anyone know everything and that there is nothing beyond what they know? This positivism has arisen in science based on what we experience. Positive means only what we experience has any credence. We can put our faith only in what we experience. Positivism. Any invisible forces, we have to consider that only superstition. We don't allow. We don't allow that as part of knowledge. It's called positivism. What is invisible, we don't allow, and only what is experienced, that is all that we can base knowledge upon. So this is the exact opposite. Positivists want to say there is no religion, there is no God, there is no soul, nothing. Just what we experience. But we can experience we are thinking, and we have mind, we can experience we are conscious. But those things have no sensuous experience. And if I experience that you have a mind, someone else has a mind, or someone else is conscious, how I can directly experience that, even that I can't directly experience. And are we to give no reality, attribute no reality to those things? One philosopher, current philosopher, Canadian philosopher, Alvin Plantinga, his name, he wrote one book, God and Other Minds. God and Other Minds. You believe in other minds, which you can never directly experience. But why do you say there is no God? You say other minds exist? Yes, no doubt. We would be crazy to deny that. But where is the direct experience of that? The only indirect, only mind we can directly experience is our own. Yet we imply... induce from other evidence that there are other minds also. And yet we say you can't induce that there is God, inductively arrive at that conclusion that there is God. Why? Because they say we have no experience, but there's indirect experience. Inductive experience, inductive reasoning rather. What experiences we have, we can inductively conclude there must be God. For instance, the scientists, the more they are studying life, the living organism, the more they are realizing how complex it is. Originally, they had a very simplistic idea of life, of the organism. and they had their mechanical ideas about life, how it came. Now, with the advancement of science, it is not that the mechanical idea has been confirmed. Rather, the situation has become so complex that they must conclude that there's something else going on besides simple mechanics. It's not possible, by a mechanical arrangement of parts, that the organism could have been formed in such enormous complexity, even at the simplest level. I have no explanation for it. And yet, they maintain their adherence to the mechanical ideology, the positivistic ideology. And despite the evidence that would lead one to think that there is something that has formed life that is not of the, of a purely physical nature. Can't be. So like that induction, we have to say there is some higher intelligence that has created life, that life belongs to an order of reality that is not explainable in terms of mere positivistic science, physics and chemistry. Like that. So our age is characterized by that type of ignorance, that type of mentality, which refuses to see the higher structure, the higher substance, or the higher subject that is behind the more grosser, meaner, and coarser structure that we can observe with our physical senses. And even that is limited. Anyhow, that is the nature of Kali Yuga. It is nature. So I think we'll stop here. Any comments or questions?
Maharaj, can will science ever reconcile the act of faith?
Yes. If science can realize that all knowledge is based on faith, then there can be reconciliation between science and religion. All knowledge begins with faith. In science, they call it axioms. Assumptions. You have to begin with something. A beginning has to be made somewhere. You can't begin with truth. Truth is something that has to be established. Experience, what we experience, that is not in itself truth. What we directly experience, what we are certain of through experience, that is not truth. We have so many examples of that. If you step on the rope and you think it's a snake, it doesn't mean that you're, what you think is the exact, is that thing, that experience you have. It's dependent upon your interpretation of what your senses detect. Your senses detect something, appearance, they call it appearance. But whether that appearance of things is actually truthful or not, that has to be established by something other than mere experience. That's called reason. People think, they look at something And it's that thing that they're, whatever they see, that's what it is. there are no process involved. But they don't realize. When you look at something, you say, this is a mountain. Certainly the mountain must be the real thing. You're seeing it, a big thing like that. But by the very nature of the statement, this is a mountain. There is the mountain, whatever you want to say. There, that thing there is a mountain. Or it is a mountain. Or it is a tree. We neglect the it. We think the it and the tree are the same thing. The it and the mountain are the same thing. They are not. We first experience it, or we only experience it. And to say what that it is not a perception. It is not the eye that determines what the thing is. The eye sees an it. And it is the mind, is the judgment that says that what that data is that I am receiving and through my eye. And that data, that it, is a mountain. And it's called a judgment. It is a mountain. It's a propositional statement of logic. If you are combining a particular thing, it, with a mountain, another thing. It is a very general concept. Everything is in it. But to specify in particular what that it is, that universal it, to call it a particular thing like a mountain or a tree or a cow or whatever, requires a different process than simply seeing. Just like if you make a robot and you put in that robot an electric eye, they call it electric eye. You know what an electric eye is? It's simply a kind of a tube. What do they call that? An electrical sensing tube. When a photon hits that, what do they call it?
Photoelectric cell.
Photoelectric cell. When photoelectric cell receives a photon, that's why they call it photoelectric. When every photon comes in, it creates a charge. And it releases an electron. Photon is energy. When it comes in, it releases an electron from the filament there, the film there. And that released electron causes a current. Now when that photoelectric cell is there, it receives a current. It generates a current from receiving a photon. That current is just an electrical charge, an electrical signal. What that electrical signal means, how does it determine? How can it be determined what that electrical signal means? I is just receiving some photons. An electrical signal is being sent to the brain. Oh, some energy is coming into the brain, some electrical signal. Now, how does the brain know that that electrical signal is a particular thing? It's an electrical signal that can be for anything. In order to determine specifically what that electrical signal indicates, there's something more than the eye, something more than a photoelectric cell can deliver. I can't deliver that information. If a robot has a photoelectric cell on it, in it, as a visual detector, it won't help the robot to do anything unless it knows what that electric signal, and how it is to be interpreted. And for that, they need a computer inside the robot. When such and such electrical circuit arises, and then the computer has to say, all right, go right, go forward, go back. That's all it can tell. In a robot, that's all it can do. It can't tell, oh, this is an apple, this is a grandmother. It can't distinguish. But it can be attached to some mechanism for going forward or backward, left or right, something like that, some motor response. not conceptual comprehension. A computer can't do that. But it can give some motor response. There's a light photon coming from the left, and therefore there's some object. It may shoot out some laser, and photoelectric photon comes back of a particular frequency, and the robot knows, oh, there's something there. He doesn't know that there's something there, but the indication from the computer will tell if it's coming from, if the photon was coming from the left, then there's some object on the left. And to avoid, go around, whatever, it will move. But without the computer to analyze what is what, the photoelectric eye won't do anything. It will just produce an electrical signal. But it has to be interpreted, even for a robot, what to speak of the human. Something is there. It's, I see something. Something is in the visual field. What is it? That has to be the next question. That and what? Two different questions. That something is there and what that something is. These are two different questions. They're not one question. First you have to know there is something. Then you can say, what is that something? A mind is necessary, not just experience. Data. They call it data. Huh? Collecting data. That data comes, then it can be interpreted in so many different ways. The scientists see the fossil record. So they say evolution. They don't see how a bacterium, an amoeba, comes into be a duck or a cow or whatever. I have no idea. They just see amoeba, they see a fish, they see a plant, and they see a duck, and they say, oh, the duck came from the amoeba through these different processes, these different stages. That's just an interpretation of what they see, how they are interpreting it. But how, if that is the way it actually happened, that the amoeba produced the duck, they don't know. They have no evidence of that, how that happened. They have no explanation of how it could have happened. It's giving some idea. Huh? If you look at the production of cars over a 50-year period, you'll see so many different models transforming, transformation of previous models. But they did not evolve. We can say the car came from the other by some mechanical mutations. That would be foolish. Different books are there in the world. All have letters, all have the alphabet. In English English books, they all have the same 26-letter alphabet. Can we say one book evolved by mutation of the previous book? Each book evolved from the permutation or mutation and permutation combination of the letters from the previous book. We don't. We know books don't come like that. Yet the scientists have, they say, all life contains the same molecules. Therefore, they must have come from one another. Is it a reasonable conclusion? Is this a proper way of thinking? If we don't know, they have no idea how life originated, they have no explanation whatsoever of how such a complicated, even the simplest organism, so complicated, so complex, how it could have arisen. They've never been able to do it in the laboratory, put some chemicals together, even though they have all the chemicals, and make a living organism. And yet, They want to let it evolve. What do they know? It's just their idea. But the data doesn't give that confirmation as it is. Rather, it shows something else is there. Something else is going on. Deeper explanation is needed, if it's even possible. Because these things of the subtle nature, of the conscious level, of the spiritual level, they are not analyzable in terms of scientific empiricism. They can't be analyzed like that. So many explanations can be given of how that other realm works. But it is definitely not from the level of mere experience, sensuous experience. All right. Very good. I think we'll end. And now, my Dhanavats. Dhanavats to you all.
Dhanavats
Pranam Maharaj.
Be bold.
Dhanavats Pranam.